Welcome back to the program. There's no question we are going through a period of dramatic change. The world, the nature of work and relationships, and the way we operate are changing faster than at any other time in human history. Succeeding in managing in this environment will require a degree of nimbleness and creativity in order to create any real economic value. But how creative are we? And do the old paradigms that we operate under allow us to foster and bring out that creativity? We're going to talk about that today with my guest, Bruce Nussbaum. Bruce is a former assistant managing editor for Business Week. He's a professor of innovation and design at Parsons School of Design, the founder of the Innovation and Design online channel. He's been frequently listed as one of the most influential people in the world of design, and it is my pleasure to welcome Bruce Nussbaum here to talk about creative intelligence, harnessing the power to create, connect, and inspire. Bruce Nussbaum, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. Pleasure to be on your show.
Good to have you here. One of the things that you talk about is creativity not as something reserved necessarily for artists or those that are in what we might consider creative professions, but creativity is a kind of social behavior. Talk a little bit about what you mean by that.
Well, sure. We all have a sense of anxiety when we talk about creativity, because there are a lot of myths about creativity. You know, it's supposed to be rare, and you can only see it on a brain scan, or you're an Einstein, so you have to be a genius. And so when people are asked to be creative, they say, well, not me. The weird thing is, when you look at their lives and what they do, they're doing very creative things. Anyone who has a shop and uses tools is being creative. Anyone who really cooks and likes to cook and mess around with recipes, you're being creative. If you're an engineer and you're working on engines and things like that, you never do the same thing twice, exactly the same. You are being creative. But we have these myths about creativity, so we don't see ourselves as such. We need to reframe ourselves as creative people and just accept it, and we can become more creative. And that's what I talk about in the book, how to become more creative. And some of us can become very creative.
In many ways, the very nature of how we live our lives today is, whether we like it or not, creating that framework for creativity. And it may not have been the case 20, 30, 50 years ago, but the very nature of doing what we have to do today instills that creativity in us, whether we want to accept it or not.
Well, that's true. I mean, when society doesn't change much, when your job, like my dad worked in the post office for 30 years, when our parents worked in the same place for 30 years, 20 years, when things don't change a lot, well, you know, you don't have to be terribly creative because you're not faced with a lot of different challenges. Your career doesn't fall apart on you. Your job, your industry doesn't fall apart on you, which is happening to everybody today. We are faced with what I call cascading change. Not only is it happening once or twice in one sphere or another, it's happening again and again and again in all spheres of our lives, and we have to deal with that. And to deal with that, you need to have several tools, several ways of approaching life. All this amounts to leading a more creative life, amplifying your own creativity.
And for those in the business world, it means understanding better how to manage creativity and how to manage creative people, which is something that's new within the context of most workplaces.
You know, our whole business ideology and business ethos is focused on efficiency. And, you know, it comes out of an era when things didn't change much, and the only way to make profit was to squeeze more out of the same. So we became more and more efficient. We shipped a lot of stuff overseas because it was more efficient. It was cheaper. We increased productivity to squeeze more out of people. But the truth of the matter is, you can do that, but what you're doing is getting smaller and smaller and smaller amounts of profit out of squeezing. It's like a lemon or an orange. The real profit comes out of creating the new, creating something really different that people want to pay for. And that's where we need to go. Creativity was always, from the very beginning, the real soul and heart of capitalism. The idea of going into something unknown and finding opportunity and then going to create something that is of value to people, that's at the very heart that's at the very heart of creativity, and it's the very heart of entrepreneurial capitalism. You know, one of the funniest things I realized, you know, here in New York, and last year we had Occupy Wall Street, which, you know, swept the city, and they talked a lot about, you know, crony capitalism. And at the same time, we had the Tea Party, which swept different parts of the country, and they were also talking about crony capitalism. Left and right really hate crony capitalism, but they both love Steve Jobs. Tea Party, Occupy, they love Steve Jobs. And why? He represents to them the kind of entrepreneurial capitalism that we all kind of like. And at the heart of entrepreneurial capitalism is creativity. We've got to get back to that.
At the heart of that also is a certain level of risk that I think people are, or a lot of people are uncomfortable with. And I think that in many ways inhibits creativity on the part of a lot of people because they fear that there's some kind of risk involved.
Yeah, it's very funny. You know, there's this great piece of research which showed that when people are faced with uncertainty, they will always choose predictability over creativity, even when they know something new is absolutely essential to save them. Okay? Even when they know that going back to the predictable thing will not save them, they still choose it. The research also, I love this, it's in the book. They had people associate the idea of creativity with various words, and the words that they chose were poison and my very favorite, vomit. Okay, creativity makes people love it, right? They choose vomit, right? They associate creativity. It's because, you know, it makes them sick to their stomach. They get very anxious. So, now I understand that. And very often, these are the very same people who are, in fact, quite creative in their lives, but they don't think of themselves that way. So, the fact of the matter is, when you have a world of what I call VUCA, a world of, it's a volatile world, it's uncertain, it's complex, and it's ambiguous, you have no choice but to take risks because your job is going to disappear anyhow. Your industry will disappear anyhow. You could just see it all around us. Things are changing dramatically. So you really don't have choice. You must take some risk. And the book shows you how to manage that risk, the behaviors and skills you can take to get you to the future. And it's risky. But, you know, doing nothing is even riskier.
Are you finding that young people get this more intuitively? The digital natives, for example, understand innovation and risk and entrepreneurship at ever-increasing rates? Or do you find some of these same problems there, too?
I don't think that the fact that they're digital natives means all that much, except that they're familiar with the latest technology. But even my students talk about their younger brothers and sisters and how they use technology in a very different way. So even though they're more accustomed to social media than the boomers, than I am, even they are facing a whole other generation with a whole other layer of technology. What I really think is it's all about when you're born. You know, younger people, just think about it. If you're, say, 20 or 22 or a teenager, what your life has been over the last 20 years, right? Your mom and dad probably have been downsized more than once. Yeah. You've been born into an era of constant war. You've been born into an era of boom and bust, not once, but twice. Everyone is telling you the jobs that are out there are going to change soon. What are you going to do? So they're born into an era of constant change where there is no certainty. And that is their norm. And they have to deal with it. And they're trying desperately to deal with it. You know, the fastest growing major today in America is the double major. People are trying to spread their bets and to understand more things so that they're able to be creative and adaptive to a changing world. And they're right to do that.
One of the frustrations, seemingly, in looking at creativity is that traditionally it's been something that's been hard to measure. Not only do we want more efficiency, but we also want more metrics and everything from education to the workplace. Talk a little bit about how we need to look at creativity in order to find the metrics inherent in that.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, again, we we often confuse numbers with information and metrics with assessment. And they're not the same thing. You can have all kinds of numbers and analysis and numbers that appear to give you a correct level of something, and it's all BS. Just turn on TV and look at all the programs, you know, Project Runway and the dancing shows, singing shows. All of them have something in common. They have people who are trying to be creative, right? They're out there performing, they're doing new things, and you have a jury. Three or four people who are basically experts in the field, they are assessing them, and they are deciding who is the winner. They are deciding who is the best, the most creative. If you go to Juilliard or any design school, you will find that people who have been admitting students for generations admit them on the basis of their performance and their portfolio, their performance and portfolio. You go to the Olympics and look around. You will see the same three or four panel judges, jury, of experts deciding what is creative. The fact of the matter is creativity is, I call it domain specific. It is, I mean, you can learn general skills and behaviors of creativity, but the measure, the assessment of creativity is always within a specific sphere, and we do it all the time. So you really need a group of people who have been around, who are experienced, who, as I put it in the book, you know, they know their patterns and they know what's different about the patterns, what's, you know, on the edge or what's not. A small jury of people can assess creativity within the field. We do it now. We do it on TV. We do it to each other. It's easy. It's not that hard.
And yet everything that we're doing in education today, or certainly everything we've been doing under the context of No Child Left Behind for the past 10, 12 years, has been antithetical to all of these things that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a disaster. It's absolutely a disaster. Teaching to the test is about the worst thing you could do for generating creativity. I understand the impulse toward that, but what we really need, if you really want to increase creativity in America, you bring back shop and you bring back art. Art and shop should be really at the very center of our curriculum. That's where you begin to have playful behaviors, looking for new things. It's where you learn to make, and make has got to be one of our creative competencies. And we really have to get away from this idea that you can, that testing is learning. Testing is not learning. Testing is memorization. And in an era of Google search, memorization is no longer a high value. You could just go search for it. And, you know, in the old days, it was important, not now. So memorizing a scientific theorem or, you know, an algorithm, it doesn't matter. You could look that up. But thinking creatively, and learning how to do things, that's something that we all need to know. And we got to get that back into school. We used to have it. We've got to get it back.
I guess the question then becomes, what are the core competencies and what is the basic body of knowledge that does become essential, even if some of it is more rote learning, in order to create a cultural environment that fosters creativity?
Well, I mean, that's a very good question. And I think that's what my book, Creative Intelligence, starts to do. It's arguing for a new conversation about what should be a 21st century liberal arts education. You know, liberal arts, when you think about it, is all about the individual. It's all about trying to make the individual a good citizen in a society. Well, and that's great. That's really good. But what we want to do today is to really go beyond that. We want to make a creative individual who is able to participate and shape society, because society is changing and falling apart. And we need people who are able to go into what is basically a frontier and able to deal with it in a very positive way. And to do that, we need to teach a certain number of things that are quite different from liberal arts. Again, we need to teach making capabilities. Shop is a great place to begin with. We learn from doing. You know, John Dewey, learn from doing. We've really gone away from that. We need to bring back the doing. So we're talking about Montessori, learning with those blocks. We're talking about painting and music. We're talking about 3D printing and all this good stuff that's now in shops. We need to bring that to the center part of our curriculum, in addition to reading the classics as well. So I'm really suggesting that we have to have a dialogue about just what goes into a liberal arts education today and whether we should even call it liberal arts. Liberal has a very different connotation today than it used to be, than it used to. I would really call it a creative arts curriculum that we need and that we have to have a conversation about.
One of the things you point out is that while we think of America as a place that's a hotbed of innovation, the fact is that we're not very innovative as a society in most things.
I know. I mean, this was a killer. I learned this when I was at Business Week. You know, we all think of ourselves as living in an innovative society. You know, we have Facebook and Google and iPhones and this and that. But the fact of the matter is, there's this great research that was done out of Washington by the Census Bureau and the NSF, National Science Foundation, right, that showed that only 9% of all public and private companies in America do any kind of product or service innovation. So let me repeat that. Only 9% of all companies, whether they're private or public, do any kind of innovation. So, I mean, that's a devastating thing. And when we stop to think and sort of step back, it's true, even if it's twice as much, you know, as the statistics show, it is a devastating, devastating portrayal of lack of innovation in corporate America, in the economy, and in much of society. So we need to deal with this, and we need to be honest about it. And again, that's what creative intelligence is all about.
Why do you think that that number is so low? In a society where, at least from a business perspective, if it'll help the bottom line, everybody wants to jump on board. Why have we been so resistant to innovation?
Well, you know, when you think of the innovations that really have changed our lives over the last 20 or 30 years, almost all of them have come out of startups. They've come out of young people who founded companies that scaled. And in fact, all the net new job creation in America comes from new companies that have scaled for 5 or 10 years. Large companies, by and large, have cut employment over the last 20 or 30 years. So when you see that and you see where the real source of innovation comes from in creativity, you get a sense of, oh, larger corporations that have been around a long time are really not in the business of creativity and innovation. They're really in the business of efficiency. They're squeezing out more and more pennies from what they've always done. And the question in my mind is whether you can change those cultures, whether you can change these corporations. I think to some degree you can. For others, well, you know, they shouldn't take this creative destruction. They're going to go.
And, of course, creative destruction is what creates some of that fear that we talked about earlier. And it creates it not only in the public, but it creates it among larger, more established companies.
Well, they should be afraid. We should all be afraid. But, I mean, there are two things. In terms of individuals and people who have jobs, their basic job insecurity has come because of efficiency, because things have not grown, new products haven't started, things have been squeezed, and they have been squeezed out. So the fact that, big corporations have been focusing on efficiency hasn't really helped people. They've lost a lot of jobs. And let's face it, you know, we all have a lot to fear if we are not creative and we cannot recreate our jobs, our careers, and our companies. Many companies will go under. I remember when IBM was about to go under. This was in the 1980s, and they were king of the mainframes, and all of a sudden all these PCs came by, right? And Wall Street was calling for them to chop up, you know, get blown up and into very many parts. And the board did something that boards of directors rarely do. They chose someone outside IBM, someone who wasn't even an engineer, a guy named Lou Gerstner. Now, you know, Lou came from RGR Nabisco. This was a food and tobacco company. He knew nothing about, very little about technology and engineering. And he did a very smart thing. He didn't stay at, you know, once he got to be CEO, he left IBM and he just wandered the country around and wandered the globe talking to IBM's customers, getting into their culture, finding out what was meaningful for them. And I talk a lot about that in my book. You have to get into the other person's culture and find out what's meaningful to them in order to then do something, in order to then create something that's meaningful for them. So Lou went out, I think he was out for like 6 months or maybe a year, wandering around talking to customers and finding out, again, what's meaningful to them. He came back and he said, you know, I talked to these people. You know, I talked to all our customers. And they don't really want mainframes from us. They don't want heavy metal from us. They want solutions. They want help in dealing with the world so that they can do their business better. And he said, look, you know, the roots of IBM are, what we do is we take data and we use it to help company make decisions. We've got to get back to those roots. So he transformed IBM from a heavy metal mainframe company into a services solution company, and basically a consulting company. And he fired half the company, maybe even more, and he changed the culture and saved the company. And now they're quite creative for a large corporation and very profitable. But you know how rare that is? But that's what it takes, and it takes a lot of guts to do that.
One of the things that we're seeing, and essentially what Gerstner did, was a kind of R&D of a certain kind. And one of the things we've seen, particularly among larger corporations, is in squeezing out those efficiencies, they've also squeezed all the money out of R&D in a lot of big companies.
Well, that's true. And I think for a lot of companies, R&D is very, very important. And if you look at the really creative big companies like 3M and Corning, which, you know, Corning is the one that made this beautiful glass for the iPad and for a lot of the iPhones, a lot of the great Apple products, they have been able to maintain their R&D spending through thick and through thin, through recession and what have you, and put it into creativity. And, of course, you know, a company like 3M, I think something like half its profits are generated by new products every 2 or 3 years. It's just astronomical. And they live off the new. They live off the economic value of their creativity. Other companies can't. But, I want to point out that, you know, Apple has one of the lowest R&D expenditures of any corporation. Apple's genius is not to generate new, innovation or new invention. Its genius was to put it together. And a lot of creativity is connecting the dots, not inventing the new, but connecting dots so that you create the new. R&D is very important, but it is not always the most important thing in creativity.
Can we take a lot of the older workforce that's around today and teach creativity? Can we make those people creative?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a great fallacy that, you know, most people, certainly people in their middle age, are not creative. You know, just go into their lives. You know, lots of people have workshops. You go down there and they're making all these wonderful things, and not one of them is the same as the other. They are creative in their personal lives and in the things that they are passionate about, in their hobbies or in other things. They know how to create. They may not see themselves as creative, but they know how to do it. It is the easiest thing in the world. I'm telling you, it is easy. I've seen it happen. To take people who don't see themselves as creative, but who are, and put them in an environment where they go ahead and do new things that have value. And creating new things, building new things that have value, is at the very heart and soul of creativity. You can, if creativity is a value, is a behavior, like a sport, you can teach people to be better at sports. Some of them can be really great at sports, but we can all be better at sports. The same thing with creativity. We can all be better at creativity. Some of us can be really good, but all of us can be better at it.
And it gets to something you touched on a moment ago. You were talking about it with respect to passion. But really what it also is engagement, being engaged with something.
Yes. Yeah, you know, people ask me, okay, what is the one thing I should do tomorrow to become more creative? And my answer is go get a creative friend. So find someone that you think is creative. You don't get, you know, messed up about, well, how do I measure this? You know who's creative in your circle. Go and make a new creative friend and do things with that person. And at business, if you're, you know, we're all on teams these days, bring in a more creative person into your team. You will begin to see how that person behaves, how that person reacts, how that person thinks, and you'll begin to see very easily, you know, and quickly what creativity is all about and how you can become more creative. There are lots of these little behaviors that are in the book that can enhance or amplify our creativity immediately and quickly.
Bruce Nussbaum, his book is Creative Intelligence, Harnessing the Power to Create, Connect, and Inspire. It's just out from Harper Business. Bruce, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Be creative.
Thank you.